On Tech News Today, Tesla CEO Elon Musk burns Apple by saying Apple hires the employees that Tesla fires. Plus, a new website is so distracting, you may never work again. And SwiftKey launches an artificial intelligence keyboard. Wow. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, October 9th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give a new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/TNT to apply for a loan now. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. Our co-anchor today is Mashable senior tech correspondent Christina Warren. And behind her, she's got the backing of the entire Mashable staff. Check that out.
I do. Check it out. It is the Mashable newsroom.
It's just electric in that room. I can feel it. And people
I'm
typing.
The hub, Mike. I'm the hub.
All right. That's what I thought. Well, we got a lot of tech news coming up here, and so why don't we jump right into it? We've also got literally the most distracting website ever created. We're going to show that to you at the end of the show. But first, let's jump into the business end of the show. The Obama administration has decided against pushing for a new law requiring tech companies to provide access to the encrypted communication of their customers. Instead, the administration will try to persuade the companies to do so without forcing them to. Christina Warren, this is a pretty good thing and surprising, too, because it's so easy for politicians, including the president, to just take the easy way out. If something terrible happens and the law enforcement people in government say, well, you know, if only we had access, you know, we could have prevented this terrible thing. So it's a risky thing for him to be doing politically.
Politically, I guess it's risky. Although at the same time, I mean, you know, look, he's nearing the end of his seventh year in office. You know, he's got one more year, you know, left basically. And I think he's more willing to take risks now. Obviously, there's, you know, Congress and the Senate are kind of going through their own issues right now. So I don't know if it's that politically risky for him to make this move. I definitely think this is a solid move. I'm certainly happy that he's making this decision. I think that, you know, a lot of times we do talk about kind of this growing kind of intersection between tech and politics. And we've seen the two industries definitely get a lot, the two worlds, I guess, get closer together, especially under the Obama administration. And I mean, obviously, I think this is paying off. I also think I have to think this has to do have something to do with, you know, his CTO, Megan Smith, and the people who are on his staff who are probably advising him and saying, look, you know, realistically, it's probably a lot better if we can get companies to agree to do this on their own rather than trying to force anyone into doing anything, because that opens up lots of problematic scenarios as well.
Yeah, and the essential conflict here is that law enforcement can make their jobs easier, much easier, actually.
Yes.
If they could just see everything people are saying to each other inside of encrypted electronics. The problem is that throwing others under the bus, because once you have a door, other people can walk through that door, and that's the problem.
That is the problem. And I also think that I would push back a little bit by saying how much easier it makes their job. I certainly think it can, in some scenarios, make their jobs easier to have that information. But we've seen time and time again where people who've had access to the information still haven't stopped things. But more beyond that, I think that it's worth talking about the fact that if you have access to so much information, right, then is it really any easier to lock in on what you're looking for? I mean, if you have access to everything, you know, at a certain point, it becomes kind of, you know, being a needle in a haystack to try to find the pertinent information that's out there. In a perfect world, law enforcement would like to have access to all information and be able to get the most important stuff at their fingertips, but that's not reality. So I would push back a little bit on the idea that, you know, them having access to this stuff makes their jobs better, because it could in some cases, but in some other cases, they might still miss things. And I don't know if the fundamental question is preventing one crime worth possibly, you know, infringing on lots of other rights and potentially committing other crimes? And you know, I think that's a answer that we'll have to come to as a consensus as a country.
Yeah, well, I, for one, think that this is the right thing to do. Unfortunately, we can't relax because, of course, a new law could be brought into Congress at any point. And of course, I'm sure that the opportunists in Congress and in government are just waiting for something terrible to happen so they can say, see, we need to see inside that encrypted communication. So
if only we'd had access to this. And it's like, well, you can never really prove that. You know, I mean, that's the hard thing. It's super easy to say if we had access to this, we could do it. But, you know, I mean, when we look back at terrible things that have happened and we look at warning signs where people, frankly, had access to things and it still didn't stop it. I mean, there's no telling. So, but you're right. Opportunists will certainly try to take advantage of this and say, if only we'd had access to all your emails, we would have known. But I mean, that just means that the really bad guys are going to find ways to communicate when, you know, the government can't access things. I mean, it's an ongoing problem.
More news coming up, but first let's talk about Gazelle. You know, Gazelle, of course, is super famous for being a place where you can sell your used gadget. Always a great idea to sell to Gazelle. But I want to make the case for buying from Gazelle. If you want to, you know, if you use your phone for 2 weeks, it's a used device at that point, even if you bought it new. If you buy it from Gazelle, you're going to get a gently worn, gently used device that's been thoroughly protected and that's backed by a 30-day return policy. Well, if you use it for a month, you don't like it for any reason, just send it back. They give you all your money back. It's the best way to buy a device. Every one of us has a budget. None of us can afford that Vladimir Putin phone from the company Caviar. We have a budget. So maybe that budget is $300. Maybe it's $500. Maybe it's $900. But we always have a budget. So if you take that amount of money that you are willing to spend on a smartphone and take it to Gazelle instead of to, you know, your carrier, you're going to get a better phone. It's that simple. So you want a better phone, and the place to buy a better phone for your money is Gazelle. Just go to GAZELLE.com and buy your phones always from Gazelle. Give life to used electronics, trade in for cash, or buy certified pre-owned. Visit Gazelle.com right now. Check it out. You got to check out Gazelle as a place to buy. Well, in another story, the FBI issued a statement today warning that the credit card industry's EMV chip and sign system is a security risk. Russell Brandom is a reporter for The Verge and joins us to talk about it. Hey, Russell, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, what's the FBI saying exactly about this security risk?
So I think it won't be news to anyone in the industry. I think we've known for a while that chip and sign is not as good as chip and PIN, and it's sort of just the best we can do right now. But I think there's a difference between, you know, security people saying this and sort of the industry saying it and the FBI kind of blasting this warning to merchants that, you know, given the choice, you really need to switch to chip and PIN because it's just a lot more secure than relying on signatures.
So, okay, you know, why doesn't the U.S. just fully embrace chip and PIN already? I mean, everyone else has. What's the real holdup? I mean, obviously, you know, the point of sale upgrade systems and all that stuff aside, but really, like, what's up? Why haven't we embraced the real solution yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think retailers are just really slow. You know, my colleague Micah Singleton wrote about this a little bit, and I think one of the shocking things to me was the reason we're talking about this is on October 1st, there was this deadline to implement chip and sign, at least, and ideally chip and PIN also. And, you know, the deadline means after this point, there's no, you know, the liability is entirely on the people that haven't upgraded. So if you want any protection at all, you need to have upgraded by now. And it's something like 58% of retailers just haven't made the switch and are completely exposed, which I think is really, I think if you're asking the question of why chip and PIN hasn't happened when, you know, in Europe, it's 10 years old, everyone has been using this for ages. You know, I think the people who are implementing it would say, well, look, we can't even get chip and sign out the door. So how are we going to get this whole transition? Having said that, I think, yeah, I mean, we should have. This is, we shouldn't have chip and sign as a halfway measure. There's not really a lot to recommend it.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, I think when even the FBI is coming out and saying, hey, this isn't really that secure, it's a sign that says, you know, actually, maybe we just go straight into implementing the most secure system. We've sat on our hands long enough. This has been a standard in the rest of the world for a long time. And retailers, if you want to do business and you don't want to be held legally responsible for things that are going to happen, if you get hacked, then you need to adopt this system. And if you don't, then that's on you when customer information is stolen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I mean, I think it's easy to forget, you know, covering the security beat within the U.S. In the past 18 months, we've seen a huge string of, you know, Target, Home Depot, all of these enormous hacks costing huge amounts of money, really from the same strain of malware, the back-off malware that just became available. And, you know, a lot of people upgraded to protect against it, but not everyone did. And if you didn't, you got hit with it. And now there are all these expensive legal cases of how much of this is going to be on the retailer, how much of it is going to be on Visa. You know, this isn't happening in Europe. Germany does not have to worry about attacks like this on point of sale terminals because it's just not lucrative. Because, you know, when you get the credit card number, it still generally is requiring a PIN. The payoff from compromising this data just isn't as strong because they have made these infrastructural changes and, you know, made it 10 years ago.
So let's think about three different systems for processing a retail payment. One of them would be chip and sign. Another one would be chip and PIN. And the third one would be Apple Pay and Android Pay, those types of systems. How would you rank those in terms of how secure they are? And for example, is Apple Pay and Android Pay significantly more secure than chip and PIN, for example?
I mean, absolutely they are. And I think this is an example, and, you know, I'm sure we tech journalists could go over and over examples where this has happened, but the big industry has kind of lagged behind, and a lot of companies that weren't payment companies 5 years ago have really leapfrogged in terms of we're able to make a more secure, easier system that, you know, the big players like Visa and traditional credit card companies simply aren't able to deploy because they're not as agile as sort of Apple or Google, or even, you know, a company we would think of like PayPal that is not, we have seen more Visa breaches than PayPal breaches, right?
Right.
You
one is a bank and one is not.
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's absolutely true that the tech industry is just better at these things because they can deploy these things more quickly. They don't have the scale of Visa. And I mean, that's part of why Apple can just say, we're putting this in iPhones now. And I mean, in the case of Samsung Pay that just became public, we have this, you know, they have this magnetic transmission technology that they can just put out there. And I think it's much harder for Visa, which has to deal with merchants, many of which have all this legacy technology and they don't want to pay to upgrade it. And, you know, Visa has to sort of bring all of those people along for the ride. And Apple doesn't. Apple can just say, listen, we're offering this thing. People are going to want to pay this way. You know, get right on board or don't. And as a consequence, doesn't have the same reach. But the system is definitely unquestionably more secure. I mean, it's tokenized better. There are more sort of the second factor is generally there because you're signing into your phone. And just the fraud protections are better. There's more fraud monitoring.
Well, Russell, I have seen the future of payments, and it is Starbucks Order and Pay in their app. I love Order and Pay. Basically, how this works is it works just like the app used to, where you pay digitally through their app, and it sort of sucks money out of your bank account as needed automatically. So it's great for Starbucks. They can just take your money.
Yeah.
But basically, it remembers your previous order. I tend to get the same thing over and over, so I just, you know, it's Americano with an extra shot. So I just tap on it and say, yeah, this is the store. Yeah, I want to pay. Yes, process the payment. And then like 3 minutes later, I just saunter in, pass the line, grab my drink and you know, take off. It's just wonderful. I wish everything worked like this. And of course, Starbucks is going to be supporting Apple Pay. That's big news today. But the Apple Pay app, frankly, I usually, you know, I used to use my watch to pay for Starbucks. I do use my Apple Watch to pay for my groceries and stuff. I'm pretty much almost ready to be done carrying a credit card around even a wallet altogether. But I'm glad that Apple is on the scene here because they're going to really push everybody around. And I think that's finally what it's going to take. So.
Yeah.
Well, Starbucks is an interesting one because they were partnered with Square up until the end of last year. And sort of it was running the background of the app. And now they're doing their own thing. Probably more and more of it is, you know, built using Apple infrastructure. And, you know, there are a lot of options for a company like that that can sort of deploy things centrally.
Now, one question I did have for you, Russell, do you think, and also I guess for you, Mike, you know, once we are seeing kind of this consumer interest in things like Apple Pay, like Android Pay, you know, maybe eventually Samsung Pay, that's going to, you know, require that merchants upgrade their POS terminals. Does this create now an opportunity for chip and PIN to actually get adopted too? You know, because if you're going to be updating your terminal anyway to support NFC, to support Apple Pay, you might as well update your payment terminals and get, you know, chip and PIN as well. Do you think that's an opportunity that maybe we can kill two birds with one stone, so to speak?
I hope so. I mean, I think the strange thing about this is you're worried about the kind of last people on the boat, right? The last people to upgrade. This is a common security story of, okay, you know, we fixed the bug in the new Internet Explorer, but the people who are still out there using Internet Explorer 6 just because they've never upgraded. Those are the people who are vulnerable. In this case, it's, okay, they have your credit card number. What can they do with that in the sort of 48-hour, 36-hour, maybe 24-hour window before it gets shut down? And if there is a place in the world anywhere to use it, they will go to that place. And I think as the place gets smaller, it becomes easier and easier to look for the people there. But, you know, I think we'll see a lot of places upgrading, right? I mean, the number right now is 58% that are at least coming onto chip and sign. I think probably that number is going to grow a lot in the coming months. But the last 5%, 10% of people, how long is it going to take for them to get on board? I don't know if Apple Pay is going to be what makes the difference. It's tricky.
I think it's hilarious, given all these security concerns that everybody pretends to have, that they still accept the whole use of a credit card inside of a restaurant, because essentially you're sitting there, you order a meal, and then you're hostage. You can't leave until you pay. You can't get the attention of the waiter. When you finally get them, you sort of like ask for the check. They bring the check when they get around to it. Then you put the credit card, and then they take it to the back room where they can easily copy the 3-digit code that enables them to order things online, and they can find online places to order things where the, you know, the bill won't come to you, or it won't come to you very soon. It's redonkulously insecure. I mean, it's just incredible that anybody accepts this. It's ludicrous, really. And everybody every time they go to a restaurant.
I mean, I have a plan to disrupt restaurants that I will share with you now. Hopefully some entrepreneur will take this on. But this is why we have to move to dim sum style ordering across the entire restaurant economy. Just pay at the end at a counter. Don't wait for the food. They bring the food out. You say yes or no. It's the future of restaurants.
I don't think we need the counter. I think the Apple Store is the way everything should work, where basically there is no cash register. There's no line. Right. There's nothing. You basically just use your phone to buy stuff and walk out. Anyway, that's just me. First world problems. Russell Brandom is at TheVerge.com and on Twitter at Russell Brandom. Russell, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Apple removed a new category of apps from the iOS App Store last night. The removed apps are those that install their own root certificates. Some of the apps are ad blockers that blocked ads in other apps, including Apple's own Safari browser app and its news app. The reason is that apps that install their own root certificates could theoretically gain access to encrypted communication. Apple says they'll work with the developers to reintroduce some of the apps without the security problems. This has been kind of a circus for the last week or two, Christina, as Apple controversially approves apps and then withdraws them and then approves them.
Yep.
So it's been a sort of, ever since they allowed ad blockers, it's been this weird back and forth.
Yeah, no, I think that what probably happened is I think people who are involved with the app approval team aren't necessarily always in line with some of the security teams or some of the other processes. And there are certain things that maybe you don't know when you're going through the typical approval process that their testing can't really bear out. And so you kind of got to, you know, see what happens once it's in the wild, and then go back and talk with the developers. But it certainly, you know, smacks of miscommunication. And we've certainly seen this before. I remember one time last year, there was a very popular app, pCalc, which is one of my favorite calculator apps that was featured in the App Store. It was featured as like best, like new and notable. Like it was called out as having this great feature. And then it was banned from the App Store for the same feature that it was highlighted as having. It was, you know, the left hand not talking to the right. And so this could be a similar scenario, although I think that this has more security implications. What I really think it kind of highlights is I think that everyone, including Apple, was kind of unsure of how this ad blocking market was going to really take off in the App Store. I had a feeling that it was going to, you know, obviously be very busy and take off quite a bit. But even I was surprised by just like how quickly, you know, the top 10 paid apps became ad blockers and most downloaded became some of the free ad blockers. And I think that kind of changes the game when you are anticipating that maybe it's a pro tool that only a few users are going to use, then maybe you're not looking at all of the potential implications. But when it's something that you're getting, you know, thousands and thousands of downloads, then you've got to be thinking, is this potentially introducing something that could be bad and could make our system or our browsing sessions less secure, which is obviously the very last thing you want to do. Because the whole point of having these content blockers is to presumably make, your browsing experience better, not to potentially open up ways for it to be more harmful.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. Well, SwiftKey posted a new keyboard that uses a neural network to think more like a person. It improves predictive text by reading what you're writing and estimating likelihood based on context. Early reviews say it's amazingly good, and the alpha version is available free for Android only now in the Google Play Store. This is one of the cases, Christina, where the Android folks get it first, but this looks absolutely really, really awesome. Put your hand down, Greg. Don't be smug. You either, Jason. Jason's already got it.
Good for them. I mean, I can't wait to try this out and put it on one of my Android devices. I think this is absolutely the best way for predictive stuff to work when you're looking at context. And I think this is kind of one of the things that SwiftKey can do. They've been installed for so long on so many devices, you know, first with Android and then starting last year with iOS, that they're able, when you opt in and allow them to kind of capture, what you're typing within other apps, they're able to learn a lot more. And when you apply that across millions and millions of users, you can become really, really intelligent. And I think that just makes for a way better typing experience.
Years and years ago, I had a tour of Microsoft Research, and somebody there told me something that kind of blew my mind. He basically said that pretty much what you said, any sort of predictive powers by computers, there's no way to, you can fake it to a certain extent, but there's no substitute for actually having the computer actually know and understand human language. They actually have to understand it. And that's where we're going with everything. In order for the computers to get super smart, even as for something as trivial as a smartphone keyboard, they actually have to a certain extent, understand language and do their prediction through an understanding of the contextual relationship between language and the real world. So it's a really a fascinating time to be alive, because now our little keyboards are getting smart, almost as smart as we are. Well, in product obituary news, Amazon is getting into the Internet of Things racket. The company launched yesterday a new platform called Amazon Web Services Internet of Things, henceforth to be referred to as AWS IoT. The platform exists for processing and using data from internet-connected devices that are not regular end-user computers. Christina Warren, they trotted out some use cases and some partners. These include Deere tractors, which, of course, are some of the most high-tech vehicles ever created.
Absolutely.
They even talked about soap dispensers, where they had, you know, tens of thousands of soap dispensers by a single company, where they could see centrally which ones needed some more soap.
Genius. I mean, and I think that this should scare any of the companies, you know, the SAPs, the EMCs, you know, of the world, who have kind of been getting into this big data space but have wanted to get into Internet of Things and haven't really productized it in this way yet, because Amazon as a platform is such a successful platform. I mean, AWS has built such great mindshare that having this out there, I think that the potential is really tremendous, especially if they can execute it as well as they've executed the other parts of the AWS family.
Absolutely true. And there's a phenomenon that exists in Silicon Valley, in this case, Washington State, where companies, if they get big enough and if they're popular enough at anything, they have to do everything. So, this bookstore is now powering the Internet of Things,
it's
for example.
It's powering everything, exactly. But, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I honestly would trust Amazon's skills for an IoT platform more than almost anyone else, because they've done such an amazing job with cloud. You know, they really made the cloud accessible and useful for everybody of all different skills, whether it's, you know, me building a small web app to, you know, powering Netflix. You know, I mean, they're able to do it tremendously well. And so I think if anybody's going to kind of crack this IoT nut. And I honestly, what I like about this too is we've historically talked about Internet of Things and the consumer sense, right? And that makes sense because that's kind of sexy to have the smart home type of capabilities. But when you think about it in the broader sense, like you were talking about the John Deere example, you know, and as you said, they are some of the most technically advanced vehicles out there. And actually, the farming industry is one of the most technically advanced industries out there. And if you look at it from a, you know, filling soap dispensers or having, you know, insights into other sorts of, you know, anytime you need to manage tens of thousands of small things, having that puts to me the Internet of Things in a totally different context that is, frankly, I mean, maybe I'm unique here, but I find that a little bit more fascinating than, you know, having a door that'll unlock when it senses, you know, my signature or, you know, my fingerprint or whatever.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I do agree with you that I think Amazon will be especially good at this, but I do think we need to maintain, you know, variety in this industry.
Oh,
because AWS went out recently and it took out Amazon, yeah, Netflix, Tinder, IMDb. Well, we don't want everybody using the same service because if there's a glitch, the whole internet goes south.
That's a great point. That's a great point. So, yeah, so you hear us other cloud companies, you know, get on the IoT bandwagon and give us some variety so that the entire world doesn't go wrong. Because that would actually be really terrible if your infrastructure went down and it controls, you know, the locks on your hotel. That could be a problem.
Yes, absolutely. That's why nature has so much variety, according to Darwin. Well, in mergers and acquisitions news, LogMeIn has acquired LastPass for $125 million. LogMeIn plans to merge LastPass into another acquired password management company, Meldium, and both of them will continue to operate under the LastPass brand. People get queasy when companies start buying and merging the place that owns all and holds all their passwords. Are you worried about this at all, Christina?
I'm not. I mean, I think the LogMeIn has had a really good track record, you know, for people who use their service for being able to access things remotely. And it's one of those companies, if you're going to use their service, you have to kind of inherently trust them because you are allowing your computer to be remotely accessed. You know, it's basically a really nice kind of, you know, VNC client. And I think that having, you know, a password manager makes a lot of sense. I think that honestly, I can see a lot of crossover between the two products. That said, you know, you do have to think about, okay, how is this going to be run? And you've got to start thinking about the fact, how are my passwords stored? And obviously the one thing with LastPass, both its asset and kind of its curse, is that, you know, all your passwords are stored in the cloud. They are encrypted and they have really good encryption, but it becomes one of those things where you're going, okay, do I know what the policies are, you know, for this new company that's acquiring it? And I think that's worth looking into, certainly, because a lot of people, a lot of businesses, you know, rely on LastPass to handle, you know, company password management. And it's certainly a very popular consumer app, too. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that this is okay, but I definitely think it's worth looking into what LogMeIn's plans are for how they're going to protect the data and what sort of, you know, systems they have in place and what their terms of service are to make sure they're not taking advantage of anything that, you know, you wouldn't want them to take advantage of.
Absolutely. Well, we got some big numbers and the news you can lose coming right up. But first, let's talk about Prosper, one of our sponsors today. Prosper is the best way in the universe to borrow money. You can do all kinds of things with a Prosper loan. It's such a straightforward and easy to implement loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days. You can remodel your kitchen. You can put solar panels on your roof. You can pay off your high-rate credit cards. There's so many things you'd like to do. But you know what I'd like to do with $35,000? You know what you can buy with $35,000? You can buy a Tesla Model 3, which is supposed to ship in 6 months. That's right. A Tesla Model 3 is going to come down to $35,000, and you can buy one with a Prosper loan, a Tesla. Just think about it. Wow. Prosper invented the category of this kind of loan, and it's so superior to going to a bank, so superior to borrowing from friends or family. You got to get a Prosper loan. It's a great way to launch a business with a little bit of injection. You don't have to bring in any investors. You can just borrow the money from Prosper. For up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days, go to prosper.com/TNT. That's prosper.com/TNT. Got a couple of big numbers for you today. 7.7. That's how many percentage points PC shipments fell in the third quarter, according to Gartner. Okay, another big number, 10.8. That's how many percentage points PC shipments fell in the third quarter, according to IDC. Now, this drop is kind of shocking because this quarter is the one in which Windows 10 launched. And yep. Windows 10 was supposed to boost PC sales, as it has in the past, historically. But Gartner says people bought Windows 10 for their old PCs instead of buying new PCs in order to run Windows 10. This is partly a problem, I think, Christina, of the fact that Windows 10 isn't very demanding of hardware. People don't need to upgrade.
And not only that, but it's a free upgrade.
Right. Exactly.
So in the past with Windows 8, with Windows 7, you could understand rather than paying the $120 or whatever it would be to upgrade my computer, I might as well buy a new computer, you know, especially with the way PC prices are going down. It might make more sense. In this case, not only is it not that demanding from a hardware perspective, is it going to pretty much run on the same PC you probably bought when Windows 8 came out, and in fact, run better than Windows 8 ran. But it's a free upgrade, so you don't even have to go through, you know, the hoops of buying anything. So I think that this release really kind of went in the face of typical buying trends, I guess.
Absolutely. And if I was a PC OEM, I'd be freaking out right about now. Because, you know, they might be thinking, well, yeah, sure, it's the post-PC world. We'll just make a convertible tablet. But now Microsoft is making a real cool one, so that's a problem.
Yeah,
no, if I was Dell, I think I'd buy EMC or something.
yeah, I might just be like, hey, let's get out of this PC game. Yeah. Entirely screw this. Yeah, I might just buy it. That's funny.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Word of the day, our phrase of the day, actually, is Tesla graveyard. That's what Tesla CEO Elon Musk called Apple during an interview yesterday, because he said that Apple hires the people that Tesla fires. He said, quote, if you don't make it at Tesla, you go work at Apple, unquote. What a burn. What an unnecessary burn, Christina. What did you think
so
about
this? So unnecessary. You know what? God bless Elon Musk. God bless him. Because he will say things that are just so, wow, what business, what CEO of a company like Tesla should, wow, it's like you're just asking for it, you know? I love it because it's so entertaining, but at the same time, I'm thinking, oh, man, this is not going to turn out well. But it is funny because the two companies basically exchange, you know, employees. You know, it's like they're playing Red Rover with one another. You know, send Mike on over, send, you know, Jason on over, send Christina back. You know, like it's one of those things where literally they're you know, poaching from one another all the time. But I think that's the Tesla graveyard. It's
pretty economical. Actually, he can not only burn Apple, he can also burn the employees who left and went to Apple.
He's insulting them all. Oh, he completely is. I mean, it's
incredible. And the fact is that there aren't very many, like the really painful employees that he's talking about are the battery specialists. There aren't very many.
Yes.
And Apple wants them for their car, and Tesla wants them for their car. And of course, Apple's going to be getting into Tesla's business with its own car in probably four or five years. So
you have to wonder, you know, because a lot of us have thought about the fact, like, why doesn't Apple just buy them? And part of it is that obviously Elon doesn't want to sell. But at a certain point, it's a public company. You might not have a choice. But I think that this kind of underscores why, as much as it would make sense at like a grand level, like at a 500-foot view level, like it doesn't. I don't know if there's any way that Elon Musk could work at Apple.
Absolutely. And of course, if I was going to do a burn like that, if I was Elon Musk, I would immediately follow with, plus, I have my own space program, drop the mic, I'm out. So anyway, the things that you can do when you're Elon Musk, what a guy. Well, in news you can lose, if YouTube doesn't present you with funny videos fast enough, a new website is here to help. It's called VV Watch. I think it's called Vatch TV. So it's VVATCH.TV. And it strings together YouTube clips, just parts of them, one after another, which you can cycle through without clicking on anything. Of course, even if this doesn't move fast enough, arrow keys let you skip to the next clip. Let's take a look at the most addictive thing currently on the internet. Okay, this is going to be, if you don't like a little bit of violence here, folks, don't watch this. Guy on a bicycle. And there's a sign there that he just ran into.
Ow.
This is actually from a video game, of course. And I've actually seen this one before. And watch for it. Here it comes. Boom. It was playing the theme to Top Gun. All right, what's going on here? Looks like a taser. So here's a taser demonstration. The guy squeals like a, I don't know what.
And the House of Pain.
All right, well, there it is. And all you do is, it's a lean back experience here, Christina Warren. You just get this thing going. It also has these annoying, you can't really see it on our video here, but there are eyes that sort of watch where the cursor is. And that's a little bit irritating. But I think everybody's going to really be into this because, of course,
that's so cool.
It's just the most brainless thing you can possibly do. Just sit here and watch these videos.
Now I want to play Grand Theft Auto, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, we got some feedback from somebody named Felonious Munch. I don't think that's their real name. Hmm. Who commented on our story about Amazon launching the handmade marketplace in the Tech News Today subreddit on Reddit. He wrote, seems to be taking a much bigger cut. Amazon wants 12% versus Etsy's 6.5%. And Spinny on Reddit followed that up immediately saying, I'm not sure how they expect sellers to switch over when they are taking almost double the cut. My understanding, though, was that Etsy only charges 3.5%. And so that makes it even worse why they're charging so much. And if you know the answer, if you use Etsy, how much of a cut do they actually take? Let me know at tnt@twit.tv. Christina Warren, what did you think of this handmade marketplace they announced?
Yeah, I'll tell you why people would switch over, because a lot more people go to Amazon than go to Etsy. And so if you're searching for something and you can find handmade items in the Amazon search results, you potentially could be, you know, getting far more buyers than you would from Etsy. Etsy is great and a lot of people know about it, but a lot more people know Amazon. So what will be interesting will be to see, can you exist on both? Because I could see a lot of places being willing to sell on both. And maybe you sell for a slightly higher price on Amazon. You know, it's not as if people are going to be doing a lot of price comparisons on the handmade products. So, you know, maybe charge another $2 or $3 on Amazon if you can get higher, you know, click-throughs and click-to-buys. But I do think it's interesting that they're getting into this space. It makes sense for them to get into this space. They've had their marketplace program for years. A lot of people already do it with T-shirts, although they don't have, you know, for their fashion stuff, but they usually don't have, you know, great shipping times. I think this is definitely interesting. And, I don't think it's going to kill Etsy or anything, but this is certainly very big competition potentially. And I think for people who are in kind of the handmade space, it's certainly a great opportunity to sell to a lot more people.
And I think you make a really great point because, of course, you go there and you want to buy a wallet or something like that. And you do a search and you're not even thinking of a handmade wallet, but then it offers it. And you're like, yep. Wow, that's really cool. Like they will introduce you to this whole realm of product
absolutely.
Manufacturing that you wouldn't have even thought of. So, wow, Amazon is going to own everything. Very scary. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Terrence Blount in Atlanta, Georgia, who posted this check-in on Swarm. He says he's on a roll with cycling and can listen to Tech News Today all day while burning calories. He's also the mayor at his gym on Swarm. This is our first Swarm post.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. I'm from Atlanta, so yay. Thanks, Terrence.
Yay, Atlanta.
Yay,
love Atlanta. I used to go there all the time, and I haven't been there in a long, long time. There's not a lot of tech shows there anymore, is there?
No, there's not. There used to be, but not anymore. Although, you know, it's kind of a growing startup scene, sort of. But yeah, not tech shows anymore. But yeah, they used to have them all the time at the Civic Center and stuff, and back in the Convex days, and even CES used to have CES and E3 used to be there. But yeah, not for a while.
I am old enough that I remember going to Comdex in Atlanta when they accidentally schedule it during Freaknik, which is the black spring break.
That was amazing.
The thing that they do at Freaknik is they deliberately cause traffic jams, so they just clog all the streets. So my taxi driver actually had to drive on sidewalks to get me to the hotel. And then the hotel was just overrun with spring breakers. So that was exciting. And they ended up rebranding Comdex as Geeknik. So
That's so funny.
A lot of fun. I miss Atlanta. Well, show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Christina, what are you doing these days?
So I can't talk about it.
Okay.
But we'll be able to talk next week, and we'll have cool stuff to talk about.
Wow. What could it be? Well,
I don't know.
All right. I certainly don't know. All right, Christina, film underscore girl on Twitter. You got to follow Christina Warren. Thank you so much, Christina, for co-working today, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, Mike.
Can't wait to find out what you reveal. Let us know what's on your mind. Send an email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. That's 260-868-7469. You can subscribe to Tech News Today, and you should subscribe on YouTube. You can also choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And if you're ever in the greater Brick House area near Petaluma and Sonoma County, north of San Francisco, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. Just send an email to tickets@twit.tv before you come in. Subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. And you can follow me at elgin.com. Don't miss our other Tech News show, Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every weeknight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. This show was produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Kevin King. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.